She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home.
Welcome back in. Matt Bubala here with you, Radio 720 WGN. We haven't talked much space lately, but I saw an interesting article earlier this week of troubles going on with the Hubble Space Telescope. We haven't heard much about Hubble because there's so much else going on, but I thought it'd be a good time to check in with our old buddy, Mike Wall from space.com. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks very much for joining us. Hubble has certainly outlasted itself. I think they fixed it a number of times over the years, but it sounds like maybe we're nearing the end of its usability. Is that what's going on?
Well, I mean, it's really hard to tell. It is like 31 years old now. You know, it launched back in 1990. So it's really amazing that it's still going like as well as it is and like continues to make all these discoveries. It's been down for about like a week and a half now, almost 2 weeks, that there was a problem with one of the onboard computers, like one of its main computers, had a glitch on June 13th, and so they had to shut things down. And now they're investigating what the problem is, and they're seeing what the possible like solutions could be. And yeah, it's not a death sentence. You know, Hubble's had these computer glitches before, and it's bounced back. And even if this computer is fried, there is a backup computer that's on board. We shouldn't be thinking this is Hubble's end, but like we all should be preparing ourselves a little mentally for that because it is 31 years old and it's not going to be around forever. It'll be sad when it goes, but we should all be preparing ourselves for that possibility someday.
Well, I know, and I don't know if you and I have talked about it in the past. I imagine we may have over the last 5 or so years. I know they've talked about the end of Hubble and what's next for a long time. So that's planned out. Was Hubble one of those things that, you know, like I think I've teased you last time we talked, NASA always does this, like, oh, it's only good for 3 years and that'll be it. And then 15 years later, it still works. It's amazing. Like, I think they're lying to us all. If this will work for 30 years, tell them 4. And we'll, you know, look at how we got our money's worth. How long did they expect Hubble would have, you know, what was its operational life when they first launched it?
I don't remember what exactly they said, but I mean, it is true. I mean, NASA does build things very well, and they tend to outlive long outlive warranties. I mean, think about those twin Mars rovers, Opportunity and Spirit. You know, when they landed in 2004, it was said they were going to be going for 3 months, and then they're driving for years and years and years. And Opportunity only died just a couple of years ago. So I don't necessarily think it's a cynical kind of like way to boost their public image and say just set the bar low and clear it by 5 miles and we look like geniuses. I mean, I think spaceflight is really hard and they have to design things to a certain standard and, you know, with space radiation and all the rigors of launch and everything. There are things that can go wrong and do go wrong on spacecraft sometimes. So they just have to prepare their funders, you know, Congress and their bosses for all the things that could go wrong, which is why you have to set those bars a little lower than might seem like necessary to us. I mean, Hubble has definitely, and one thing about Hubble too is it was designed from the outset to be serviceable, right? There were 5 astronaut servicing missions to Hubble between in the 1990s and 2000s. So that's part of the reason why it's kept going for so long. It was like astronauts upgraded it and they swapped out parts during spacewalks, which is like pretty awesome to think about.
And so that's something they can't do anymore now that the shuttle's been retired, right? Because we don't have a way to fly, I'm guessing, directly to the Hubble anymore?
Well, that used to be true, right? But now we do have, I mean, there are vehicles now that are carrying American astronauts to space from U.S. soil. You know? I mean, that's what SpaceX has been doing. They've launched 3 missions with astronauts to the space station. I guess, theoretically, it's possible that astronauts could go to Hubble on a Crew Dragon on a SpaceX vehicle if NASA decides that's something that they want to do. I don't know that there have been any talks about that, any serious talks, but it seems like it would be possible.
Let's celebrate Hubble for a minute. Let's assume this is towards the end of the line. I think we forget, especially because so much has happened with Mars and other things over the years, that Hubble really opened up space to us, right? I mean, we got high-resolution photos of things we were never able to see in the way that Hubble's provided. Is that right?
Yeah, that's one of the enduring legacies. You know, some of the things, it's been fantastically productive from a scientific point of view. You know, it's done so many things. Maybe the most impressive or the most lasting thing scientifically is it was really Hubble observations that led to our discovery of this thing called dark energy, this weird force that's causing the entire universe to expand at an accelerating rate, and we don't really understand it. And it was just like shocking when it came out in the late 90s. But that was based on like Hubble imagery, and that's really changed our perception of the universe and how it works. But for most of us, you know, Hubble, it just hits home like a lot more to the public. Just we've gotten these amazing views of the cosmos from Hubble for years and years. You know, you see them on like people's wallpapers on their computer, just these gorgeous nebula shots and all these things. That's a really big deal too. You know, it's really helped the public engage in space and brought the sort of wonder of the cosmos down to all of us a little bit more.
We're speaking with Mike Wall. He is a senior writer at space.com. What's next after Hubble? We'll ask him that next here on 720 WGN.
Chicago's very own.
Thanks for calling 1-800-GOT-JUNK. This is Sarah. How can I help?
I've been thinking.
What have you been thinking about?
Decluttering.
And what did you decide?
I decided I should do it a lot more often.
Well, you definitely called the right number.
I decided I should declutter more often because it's an important part of a balanced and healthy life.
Oh? Tell me more.
We shower regularly to get rid of what we've accumulated.
Yes.
And we cut our hair to get rid of what we've accumulated.
Yes.
And there are other important things we do just to get rid of what we've accumulated.
Have you ever noticed that 1-800-GOT-JUNK has a question mark at the end of it?
Yes, I have noticed that.
We make junk disappear.
All I have to do is point.
All you have to do is point.
Can you come right now?
We're on our way.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan and build your new outdoor living space. Paver patios, decks, screen porches, sunrooms, outdoor kitchens, and more. Hey, it's Lou Manfredini, and I want to tell you about the folks at Architect of Chicagoland. They've been around since 2004. They're locally owned, and their top priority has been creating gathering spaces for Chicagoland families. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their website, architectofchicagoland.com, and see hundreds of great projects and read through the reviews from all their happy clients. Their designers will transform your space into your family's personal retreat. Why Architect? Well, because their professional staff is focused on design, quality, and service. Start planning now to enjoy your backyard with a free virtual consultation. They offer affordable financing and accept major credit cards. Get inspired for your family's new gathering space at architectofchicagoland.com.
They have everything you need to know and some things to just make you smile.
It's just one of the best news stories ever.
WGN-TV Morning News, weekdays from 4 to 6.
Did those heavy storms cause damage to your roof or siding? Are you seeing water spots on your ceiling or buckled or missing shingles? Call Rogers Roofing now. It's vital to act fast to ensure a minor problem doesn't turn into a larger one. The pros at Rogers Roofing will accurately identify any roofing or siding issue caused by the storm, and they have decades of experience working with insurance adjusters. And remember, natural disasters like tornadoes can be a magnet for dishonest contractors. Don't just hire anyone knocking on your door. Call a trusted local contractor like Rogers Roofing. They'll provide a free, honest inspection and great work at a fair price. Call Rogers Roofing now. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. That's 1-800-NEW-ROOF. Or log on to RogersRoofing.com. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF or RogersRoofing.com.
Matt Bubala back with you on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Mike Wall from space.com. He's a senior writer there and follows all the goings on outside of our atmospheric conditions, I guess would be the probably wrong way to say that, but that's what I'm saying anyways, Mike. So we're talking about Hubble. Hubble's probably nearing the end. You said that maybe they could fix it if they want to. Maybe they have a way that they could get astronauts there now, although for something like Hubble, that's outlived its lifespan by quite a bit and has been repaired a few times. And I would imagine that we do have plans in place for what was supposed to be the replacement, right? Where are we at with what was next after Hubble? Is that something that has launched yet or will soon, or has that been backburnered?
It'll launch soon. And just to clarify, you know, NASA will want to keep Hubble going for as long as possible. You know, it's like it's a really productive instrument and it's already up in space. And so they tend to want to keep everything going as long as possible that's already in space and it's fixable just because it's such a huge effort to launch something, to prepare something and launch it and get it up there. Mm. And the Hubble is such an amazing instrument. They're going to do all they can to keep it going. And yeah, and just as we were saying earlier, you know, I don't necessarily think that this is it for Hubble. Like there is a backup computer and they got really smart people on that mission. So I wouldn't expect necessarily that it's going to die soon.
Okay.
But we do need to think about life after Hubble. As we're saying, it's 31 years old. NASA's already got the next generation huge telescope that they plan to launch that's been built as like Hubble's successor. It's called the James Webb Space Telescope. It's supposed to launch in this coming fall, actually, like the first of November, I think. It's about a $10 billion space telescope, and it's much delayed, much cost inflated. Like over the years, we've had a lot of price increases. It was supposed to launch a long time ago, but when it does go up, it's apparently going to be amazing. It's going to do a bunch of different things. It's going to be able to kind of look back and find like the very first stars that ever were produced in the universe. It's going to be able to scan the atmospheres of like relatively nearby alien planets for potential signs of life. It's going to be able to do like a ton of things that people are really excited about.
That does sound really exciting. Now, so this should launch in the fall. Of course, it's very expensive. Will it be the same thing? Is it out just circling our planet in a place that it can be accessible, or will they put it farther out there? What's the, you know, in relationship to Hubble, is it any different in how it's going to be out there taking the photos?
Yeah, it's farther away. It will not be serviceable. It's going to be almost 1 million miles from the Earth. So yeah, that's not anything that we can send astronauts out to at this point in time. Nor would it be kind of worth it just in terms of the cost and like length of time that would take. So yeah, it's not going to orbit Earth. It's going to be a little farther away. And it just give it a little different view. And they like chose that spot in space because it's in a, like a gravitationally stable spot that, it'll be able to kind of maintain operations without burning very much fuel. And yeah, so it'll like get a little different view than what we've seen with like Hubble, but they do a lot of amazing things.
So wait, Mike, did you say it's not going to orbit Earth?
No, it's going to like what's called a Lagrange point, which is like a gravitationally stable spot in space, of like almost 1 million miles from the Earth.
And so it'll be able to kind of stay put in one spot and not have to use a lot of fuel to keep itself oriented and keep its eyes kind of fixed on a certain spot. So, yeah, it's not going to be orbiting Earth.
Okay, now I'm having trouble grasping this, so you're going to have to walk me through this. Is it possible for something to sort of stay in the same spot in space? Isn't everything we have moving at all times? And so do you mean stay in the same space in relation to everything else that is moving, or can something literally stay in the same place?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, like, we're all hurtling through space, right? We're all orbiting around, like, the center of the Milky Way galaxy, right? Like, I mean, like, none of us are stationary, but it'll be relatively stationary compared to Earth and so on. You know, it's a spot in space. There are a few of them where, like, the gravity of Earth and the sun and the moon sort of kind of balance each other out. So you don't have to burn a lot of fuel to stay in one spot.
So it almost holds you in place, the gravitational pulls of the three separate places.
It's still moving as we're all moving through space. We aren't, I mean, nothing's stationary, but it'll be relatively stationary in like relation to Earth.
That's pretty wild. So does that mean, I know we won't be able to see it from a million miles away, but like, would it be in the same spot in the sky every night if you could see it?
I don't actually know. I don't know. I haven't looked up on that and where exactly it would be. It would be far too far away for us to see
right.
it. I don't know if it's actually in our line of sight. If it probably is, because they have to get communications from it, right? So
yeah, or it's got to be at least every day at some point, right? I imagine it stays. Maybe we spin, but every day, you know, at some point we've got it. It's in our aim for 2 hours, something like that. And will that make it much tougher for them to get the photos and other data from? It's going to be a lot longer for the downloads and things, I would guess,
well,
right?
Yeah. It'll be longer, but it's still only a million miles. You know, it's not like it has to travel across the entire galaxy. That's quick for a light beam to travel that far.
It's pretty fascinating stuff. How are you excited? I know I ask this every time, but are you excited about the studies that will be able to be done from the James Webb Telescope on, you know, life on other planets, on habitable planets, et cetera? Is that going to teach us something that's going to get us very excited?
Yeah, well, and I'm pretty biased because this is the kind of space thing that I'm most interested in is the whole alien life search. And I think it's really exciting to be able to have a space telescope that will be able they'll be powerful enough to actually look for potential biosignatures in these alien skies, these planets that are like, I don't know, 30, 40 light years away. That's really amazing. That's something that we can't really do very well now. I mean, we are building bigger and bigger telescopes on the ground that will hopefully be able to do that by like the mid to late 2020s. But it's really difficult and we have to go through our own atmosphere. James Webb will do some really exciting stuff in the whole alien life search, which that's very exciting to me.
Now, when you talk about biomarkers, are you saying that they'll be able to register, say, light emitted that isn't just natural light or things like that, like type of stuff that if it was pointed at us, you'd be able to say, wait a minute, there's actually life on that planet?
Well, that's a good question, and it'll remain to be seen what's going to convince enough people. But what I mean is it'll have instruments on board that will be able to find certain potentially biosignature chemicals, right? So if we see, like for instance, oxygen with another kind of gas, say like methane, if you find both of those, if you find like the chemical fingerprints of both oxygen and also methane in the skies of an alien planet, like a lot of scientists say that's a pretty compelling case that there's life there. Just because we don't know of any geological non-life related processes that would keep those two gases in the air at the same time. Uh-huh. So it's like, that's kind of very suggestive that there's life there making those gases because they like tend to react with each other and kind of like destroy each other very quickly. So that's one of those things. But then again, then you get into this argument, well, we don't know anything about that planet really. Maybe there are processes going on in the atmosphere that we don't understand. So there'll be some people who will say, that's a smoking gun for life. And there'll be other people who say, I'm not convinced, you know, we don't know enough about that world to say that. And it'll be a very, very big debate. And I, I, I would be very interested to watch that play out. Hopefully we will all get to see that play out at some point in the next few years.
We're speaking with Mike Wall. He's a senior writer at space.com. So, okay, so we figure out there are these biomarkers. What happens next? Does NASA have a plan in place for what they do if that happens? And does Mike know what it is? And will he share it with us? We'll find out after we get a check of the News Nation news right now here on 720 WGN. Pat Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're speaking with our friend Mike Wall. He's a senior writer at space.com. We were talking about the government reports and all these videos you see here on social media and on TV shows like Extra and things like that about these videos that were captured of objects moving very weird ways and what could they be? And we still don't know. Or if they know, they're not telling us. It makes sense to me for the first time, I think, because what you said to me a few minutes ago was that if we found that there were these planets where we really think there could be life, what we'd love to do is send a probe and find out. And so then I think of like Hoth at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back when Han Solo or C-3PO or Chewbacca blast this probe that was sent by the Empire to go find out if there's something going on Hoth. And so if we could, we do that. So maybe it makes sense that some other civilization that's had a billion-year head start on us said, hey, maybe there's something there. Let's send out, and they've got probes they're sending across the galaxy, and they figured out ways to make them travel faster or something like that. Is that a possibility, or is that silly? No, if they figured out how to travel that far, they wouldn't just send a probe that we couldn't figure out.
Yeah, no, I mean, all this stuff, it's worth thinking about, right? I mean, it's certainly possible. I personally think that there's got to be other life somewhere. I think we've talked about this before. There's way too much real estate out there, and the universe has been around for almost 14 billion years. So it's just hard to imagine that somewhere in that vast expanse of space over that huge span of time that like nothing has ever developed, no other life form. And it's very possible that something could have reached a very advanced stage. But it's like for us to coincide with that, for us to meet up with those life forms in time and space, to synchronize with them, that's when you start getting into the very low odds, because we would have to be, I mean, they have to be close enough to us in time and space to actually reach out to us. And then there's the thing, like, if they're that advanced, that they could send probes across interstellar distances, keep an eye on us or to check us out or whatever, you would think they'd be able to disguise themselves if they wanted to. You know, if they could, like, travel light years distances, you'd think they'd be able to hide from our radars. But, I mean, now it's just speculation, right? We have no idea. I mean, I'm not an alien psychologist. I don't know if they want to be seen, if they wouldn't want to be seen. It's just total speculation, and it's worth talking about. I mean, that's one of the things that's come out of this, I think, that's a positive, is people are talking about this now, and part of it's because of this whole exoplanet revolution. We found so many planets that are relatively nearby and capable of supporting Earth-like life, it seems. It's not, like, crazy to talk about alien life anymore. I mean, it used to kind of be like pretty fringe, and it was pretty discouraged. I mean,
like you
talk to Navy pilots and stuff, and they're saying now it's a much more open atmosphere. They're like ridiculed for saying that they saw something they don't understand. And I think that's indicative of a broader acceptance in the culture that this stuff is not just for kind of lunatics anymore.
I know you said that it doesn't make sense that they could travel this far and not be undetectable, but maybe they are insanely undetectable and we only have these glimpses on video here and there and we don't know what to make of them. Maybe that shows that, you know, especially the way those things have been moving on some of those videos, it looks like something out of this world. Maybe that is impressive that despite everything on our planet being videotaped at almost all times right now, we still can't make heads or tails of what this is.
I'm open to all possibilities. I don't want to rule anything out. It's pretty unscientific to rule something out of hand just immediately, right?
Sure.
I mean, I still think it's pretty low on the possibilities list. I would be surprised if it did turn out to be alien spacecraft. It would be exciting, but I'd be surprised. I think it's more likely that it's some sort of terrestrial technology that somebody is trying to hide from us. But
yeah,
at the same time, I'm not going to rule it out because, I mean, you can't really. That's not
That's right. That doesn't do anybody any good to just rule something out of hand.
Well, and I know you mentioned how would we not see it, but it seems like every other week we're like, oh, an asteroid's going to pass within a million miles. We didn't see it till a week ago, or that one a few weeks ago or a month or two ago that the one guy said could be an alien spacecraft that we didn't notice till it was passed. I mean, it's amazing how much stuff can fly by us that we're not catching, right?
Yeah, and that just reinforces how big space is, and these like asteroids are dark, right? They're really hard to see, which is why we need radar instruments to sort of ping space and see if there's anything coming, because these big asteroids, even a big asteroid that's like the size of a mountain, you can't really see it. It's not emitting any light. You just need radar, and it's really, really hard to sweep all of space all the time.
So say one of these probes is something. It is something. There is somebody lands. I had asked you, what happens if we figure out there is life on another planet? Do we have a plan in place? Is there a plan if suddenly a probe landed, or there was some message delivered to us, there was some Close Encounters of the Third Kind type event? Does NASA have, do you think, plans in place? Do you think that's something that's going over with the president at the inauguration every 4 years? Like, okay, and if aliens land tomorrow, here's what we have planned, here's what we do, here's who you call first. Do they have that all sort of worked out for that possibility?
I doubt it. I've talked to some astronomers about this before, you know, SETI astronomers, and they've said, no, there's really not a firm plan in place for that eventuality, and there's definitely not one on the international scale. So it's like, I mean, it's not like all world leaders have agreed to, if the alien craft makes a landing in the U.S. or China or Australia or France or, like, wherever, you know, it's not like we all agree that this is what's going to happen. I mean,
yeah.
It would be chaotic and super crazy from a lot of angles if that happens. And like one of them would be the international relations angle. Like how do we all deal with this? We all have to come together in some way to deal with this. But that's something that I don't think we have really discussed it in like any depth at all on the world stage anyway.
Well, hopefully in our lifetime, Mike, we have answers to these questions because we need them. It would be interesting to see and finally get, you know, definitive proof that there is life elsewhere in the universe. I mean, I imagine first you're going to say it's going to come from bacteria somewhere. That'll be the first thing. But I'm holding out for, you know, somebody sending a note across gym class to say, hey, by the way, we're out here.
Yeah, if like we do survive long enough as a civilization, then I don't know. Hopefully we will find it. As long as we don't off ourselves in the next 30 years or so, we will probably have a good chance.
That would be great. I can hold on 30 more years. Mike Walls, a senior writer at space.com. We always appreciate your time, Mike. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Thanks for you too.
All right, everybody. It's time for us to get you into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and then on to the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Matt Bubala. I'm here Friday nights at 10 p.m. You can follow us on social media during the week at Twitter at Matt Bubala and on Facebook, follow the Matt Bubala Show. Thanks for staying up late with us, everybody. We'll see you next week here on WGN Radio.